Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, February 19th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 207. I have a special guest, a comedian, actress, host, DJ, musician, Amanda Seals from HBO's Insecure and her own web series that's in season 2 called Get Your Life. It's really good. I'm going to share that conversation with Amanda in a bit, but right now I'm going to talk to you for a little bit. How about that, you guys? I'm sitting in my apartment, as I am most of the time. I feel like it's almost 1 o'clock, and I feel like I had a productive day already. I got up, I went to the gym, worked out, felt good, did some cardio, did some grocery shopping, and took some DVDs back to Redbox. And you know, I feel like I'm being a productive person right now. I guess it's NBA All-Star weekend, so I guess I'm excited. I'm more excited about the stuff that's coming on TV now. This show, what the hell is the name of it? Big Little Lies, with just a wide variety of my white starlets, like Reese Witherspoon, Shailene Woodley. Who else is in it? I don't know. I'm excited about that. Girls is back. Roy Wood Jr. special, father figure, is on, coming on tonight. Girls, you know, Lena Dunham back, you know what I'm saying? So good night. Glad and holiday weekend. So this last week was pretty busy for me. I had a show last night. I had an audition Friday, like my third time auditioning for this one show, and it was my third go around. So it seems like the casting directors are nice and they like me. I hope that they put me in a show. It would be dope, because every time I go in there, I think the first time that I went in for that show, it was like, they're like funny. The last two times I went, they were just the scenes were so fucking funny, and it's a funny show where you just get to deliver lines with the lead characters, and it would be dope as hell to get the shit. So it's fun. It's fun getting to play that, just getting like a little like hit of like being funny on screen, just being like this subtle funny. So I hope the shit works out eventually. I had a show last night at Gotham Comedy Club, the show called The Manhattan. And the Gotham Comedy Club has two rooms, a main stage where you have your big headliners, national touring headliners coming in. And then they have a downstairs, maybe seats close to 100 people, if not 100. And then they call it the Vintage Lounge. And that place is steadily becoming one of my favorite places to do comedy in New York City, because the show, Adam Oleonsis and Alex Barnett, they produce this show. I think it's a monthly, and just the last couple times I've done shows there, they've just been really fun, and you get to work out. It's a packed crowd. You get to work out, and I was doing some new stuff, talking about like the social climate and political climate, just like having a really good time. And I was able to, like, this bit that I've been working on for quite some time, I was able to pair that. Oh, my God, I'm being really nerdy right now. But it was really cool to pair something up that I've been working on with, like, what's going on now. So that was really fucking fun. And it's a late show. Like, I usually close those shows out. The last few times I've done it, I've closed those shows out, like those late night spots at the at Gotham. And you go in, like, I felt like I was actually being productive as a human being, not just the bullshit like you have as an artist. I felt productive, but I felt like, because I didn't do shit yesterday. Like, I just watched 30 Rock on Netflix. Have you ever been so lazy that you don't want to even play video games? I was that lazy yesterday. Part of me feels like I earned it, but it was just I was really lazy and I didn't do anything. And I just did those spots. I mean, I took a shower and went down into the city and did my thing. But it was fun. It was just a great time, and it made me feel like I actually did something yesterday. So that was great. So shout out to Adam Oleonsis and Alex Barnett for having me. Always a good time. If you ever find yourself in the city looking for something to do, check out those Saturday night late shows on at Gotham Comedy Club. If you can't get tickets to see the big headliner upstairs, see some really funny comics, and you have it downstairs and have a great time. Equally fun. I wanted to talk about something that's been going on for the last couple weeks, actually. So Beyonce announced that she was pregnant with twins a couple weeks ago, and people were really happy about it. And they, you know, she took this photo shoot and people were going ape shit over it. And in this climate where people have been really depressed about the way the elections went, it was something neat. Like, I think Fonte posted on Facebook that, like, Beyonce's pregnancy was reminiscent of Children of Men, and that was pretty funny. And I've seen other people make that references, but those references and whatnot. And yeah, it was something. It's a bright spot in an otherwise bleak year for some people, like the way that people are feeling emotionally. And it's cool. Like, it's fun. And then the Grammys, I did not watch the Grammys. I have my reasons, but, and maybe I'll get into it a little bit. And she did her performance, which some people went apeshit over, some people. I guess it was a polarizing performance, and they were upset that Adele beat her out for Album of the Year. I don't even know if I heard Adele's album. I know Adele is super talented, and I know she's got a great voice. But I did hear Lemonade, and Lemonade was great. And not only is just like just even the like visually the video, the what do you, they call it, the visual album, like that was really fucking cool and inventive, and it was really dope, and it accentuated what she did on the record, you know. So I'll say that I'm not the biggest Beyonce. I just think Beyonce's hot. She's talented. And she's really good, and I understand why people like her. So that's like as far as I take it. Like, oh, Beyonce's dope, a lot of people like her, and good for her. And these think pieces have been coming out trying to shit on people's good time, like shitting on Beyonce and talking shit about her. And that rubs me the wrong way, because I'm seeing a lot of them pop up, because I have a lot of friends on social media that are very woke, they're very socially aware, and they always are there to count, you know, to point out people's racism and all this stuff, and it's good to follow people that do that and everything. So I'm seeing this constant stuff, and it's just like, why are they doing this to her? And they even mentioned that it gets done to Serena Williams also, because these women are in control of their own life, their own in control of their lives, their career, how they want to be presented. And if you don't like it, you just don't have to fucking listen to her music. You don't have to watch her perform. You don't have to watch Serena beat the shit out of everybody. And you don't have to watch them. So it's just a little noise. And it's coming from white women that are saying, oh, Beyonce isn't the first person to have a baby. And people are saying, oh, George Clooney's wife, Amal, or whatever her name is, isn't getting pub because she's pregnant too. And it's just, it's annoying to me when you see these black women that are beautiful, that are in control of their lives and they're living their best life and all this good stuff, and people try to shit on it. There was one woman who, so I'll just say that. And then with the Grammys, it's really not my cup of tea. Like, I kind of tapped out maybe 2009. And I think when Fonte was on the show the first time, when they did not get a win for Daykeeper, I was kind of pissed about that. And Eric Roberson didn't get an award. And I never really get, like, it's because you don't have to look to. Here's the thing. I don't think you have to, as black people. I mean, obviously we have our BET awards, we have the Image Awards and everything like that. But we should not feel like we don't, how do I want to say it? Recognition. We should be getting recognition from the most prestigious awards, people who give awards or the Grammys or the Oscars and all of that stuff, because I think we deserve a seat at that table. But at the same time, I don't think we should be trying to get that approval. We should just do the art for its intrinsic value and do it for because we love doing it. But it just pisses me off when the quality of this work is superior and it goes unrecognized. I don't even think Denzel said it best when he said, you know, man makes the award, God is the reward, you know. And that's beautiful and everything, but we want to get that seat at the table too. Just don't expect them to give it to us. I'm kind of contradicting myself. I don't know, but I don't really fuck with award shows like that. And I know, like, I'm on here all the time talking about Oscars and everything like that, but it's fun. And I've just come to the realization that Oscars and all that is basically my fantasy football. And that's the one thing that, and I still, you know, there's still movies that I haven't seen, but for the most part, as far as like hobbies and pastime, that's the thing that I'm more, that I like the most and that I follow pretty intensely. It's a fun thing to do. I'm blabbing a little bit too much about this, but and then when I realized, so once the Grammys went down, there are these stories about how there are only 10 black artists that ever won best song or best album of the year. They released the stats that not that many black people have won, when like Bruno Mars said a couple of weeks ago, black people created everything when it comes to this music. And you know, he's being very reverential in his description of what the contributions that black artists have made to music. And I think he's telling the truth. So that was one thing that I was like, well, I mean, is it really surprising when what's the guy's name? That dude, I don't even remember his name. That guy beat Kendrick Lamar for album of the year. What's that guy's name? Oh my God. Hold on. I was trying to Google. It's Macklemore. But I said Seattle rapper. What's his name? Is his name Seattle rapper? Seattle rapper White. There was a thing, and I don't know, like, I was looking up something. He was playing, Macklemore was playing some arena, and Talib Kweli was opening for him. I mean, that just goes to show you how show business is, man. So don't get too bent out of shape with that, people. Don't get mad because people are writing these bullshit think pieces and trying to shit on black shit. Trying to shit on black shit. They trying to shit on black shit, man. Shitting on black art and the movement and people being positive and empowering, man. Beyonce makes people feel good, you know. Serena makes people feel good when she wins. You know, there's countless other black artists that do great things and get and don't get the recognition for it. But we keep pressing on. There's like some article. Somebody was mad when I woke up this morning about some person from the UK who had like a shitty review on Moonlight and said something to the effect of Moonlight is for non-gays and non-minorities to like so they can feel better about themselves. In a nutshell is what she said. And you could choose to like Moonlight or not like it. I mean, everybody has their own opinion, but I think Moonlight was one of the best things I ever saw and the best thing that I saw in 2016. And that's my opinion. And you listen to my podcast because I have an opinion. You listen to hear me say how I feel about certain things. I think it's a great movie. And so somebody was shitting on that, and Twitter lit her ass up. And then they pulled up the receipt from a screenshot that she had about La La Land. And it's like, oh my God, La La Land is so great. And if you don't like this movie, you are a piece of shit or you're a bad person. And I like them both, but I like Moonlight more. And, you know, it is what it is, man. Another thing that pissed me off this week, I'm really upset about Darrell Revis getting charged for robbery and assault. He's back home in his hometown area, and these guys roll up on him, and he handles his business. Like, it looked like they were going to attack this guy. I don't want to get into reading all the reports and everything, but it was just something that really pissed me off. Like, this dude is from Aliquippa, PA, which is like a working class town. You don't fuck with people from Aliquippa. Let me look it up, man. But it's definitely a town. I found out about this town because it was featured in this movie, in this show that I've been talking to you guys about a lot, Friday Night Tykes, like the last couple years. And it's like the show where they follow. It's like Friday Night Lights with little kid football. And it was just it's a rough town, man. And you don't fuck with dudes. You don't. First of all, you shouldn't really fuck with anybody. But they were probably giving him shit, and he defended himself. And they're talking about all the charges that could come up. And you know, I hear people like turning on Darrell Revis like off the rip. Like, they don't even know what happened. It's like, oh, he had a bad year last year, and I mean, they're getting in trouble. It makes me so angry. So I hope he's lawyered up and he gets out of this situation unscathed, man. Because always trying to ruin a black man's career, man. Stop fucking with Beyonce, Serena, and Darrell Revis. Stop fucking with us in general. But damn. All right. I did not see a movie this week. I did not go to the theater this week. I did, however, buy one of my favorite movies of last year, The Edge of 17. I got that on Blu-ray. Good ass movie. Just a good ass, you could call it a teen movie or whatever. I reviewed it a few months ago, but it's just a good, solid ass movie. And it features one of my favorite up and coming white starlets, Haley Lou Richardson, who to me was the revelation in that film. Haley Steinfeld has been getting it since True Grit, the True Grit remake, and she's coming into her own. She's great. What's hard for me, so I can talk about them because they're in their 20s and they're legal. They're legal, and I can talk about them being attractive. So it's funny how, like, I mean, in Hollywood they always do this. Like, they made fun of it in one of those teen parody movies, like Rachel Lee Cook and She's All That. Like, she's a nerdy girl wearing glasses, and when she takes the glasses off, she's automatically fucking hot. Like, you can tell a girl is hot even if she's wearing glasses or not. I was seeing this girl last year, and she was a beautiful girl, and she didn't wear glasses, and I took her to the movie and she put these glasses on. She looked like a hot librarian. So, I mean, hey, you know. Anyway, so Haley Steinfeld's character is like this outcast, and she's not popular, but she goes to this party, and someone says, "Oh, are you so-and-so's sister?" And she's like, "Yeah." And so, you know, you guys are kind of like that movie, Twins. You look like Arnold Schwarzenegger's this big buff guy, and Danny DeVito is like his shitty small little brother. You look like the little brother. And it's like, she looks hotter than you, chick that's trying to talk shit about her. I know it's in the script, but it's just like, really? No, she's attractive. Anyway, so I watched that, and I rewatched Don't Think Twice with the director's commentary, with the Mike Birbiglia director's commentary, like a fucking nerd. And then I went down and did the show. So I got some music recommendations, and then we're going to get to Amanda. I'm really excited about seeing this movie, the Jordan Peele movie, Get Out. That I'm excited about that. So that's, I'm going to try to see that this weekend, and I'll tell you about it if and when I do. So music, I did some pretty good music stuff this week, guys. I listened to some new shit. There's this artist called Saba, and he has this album called, I think it's called The Bucket List Project. What the fuck is it called? Oh man. Well, I can pull up I got iTunes. Just one second, you guys. I think his name is Saba. Because it's short for sabotage, he said. I heard about him on Hannibal Buress's podcast, The Handsome Rambler, and Saba was on the podcast, and I was like, "Oh, this seems like a cool guy." And they played some snippets from his album, called Bucket List Project, and it's good. Like, it's got a nice knock to it. The production's great. He raps and sings what a lot of these young kids are doing now, and he sounds good. So I would definitely check out Saba. Bucket List Project, and Anna Wise dropped the second part of her project called The Feminine Act 2, and that's really good. I was in a lot of traffic on Friday afternoon after work. I had to head down into the city after work, and then so I was vibing out to Saba on the way into the city. On the way out, I was rocking with that Anna Wise. Anna Wise is one of my favorite singers of the last 5 years. She's got a great voice. I know a lot of people know her from Kendrick Lamar. I've bigged her up a bunch of times, but this is a full length project from her, and it's just really good. It's got a nice vibe to it, and it's fun. Also, I found out about this maybe late Friday night. This project, this from DJ Jazzy Jeff, called Chasing Goosebumps, and it's called The Playlist, featuring one of my favorite R&B artists. One of my favorite R&B artists of all time, Glenn Lewis, and DJ Jazzy Jeff put together this team of producers that. And created this project, and Glenn Lewis is the featured vocalist, and they just released it. Like, Jazzy Jeff made this announcement on Facebook Live that they were going to do this project in 7 days, and then they were going to make it available to the public a couple days after Valentine's Day. So it came out last Friday, and it's good. I listened to it, and it put me in a good mood. I noticed that, like, and it was great to hear Glenn Lewis. He retweeted me. I tweeted about the album, and he retweeted me. He's just one of my faves. Got this great voice. And I've just been a fan of his since he released The World Outside My Window about, what was that, like 2002, 15 years ago. Jesus. Who was I talking about that with? I feel like I was talking to... maybe Darren Patterson about him, or Glenn Lewis came up recently in one of these episodes where it's just like, man, I love that guy. What is he doing? So he's on this project, and he's got some really good tunes, and you got people. Let's see. I'll try to read you this blurb from Ambrosia for Heads just to give you. In a sneak attack of sorts, Jeff releases Chasing Goosebumps. This album, recorded over 7 days and documented online, features extensive involvement from R&B singer Glenn Lewis and an open cast of Jeff's friends, peers, and those he's influenced. After announcing the completion of the LP late last night, February 16th, the album is available now. Those involved include the Roots Soul Quarians member James Poyser, Dre and Vidal, who produced World Outside My Window, Stro Elliott, TDE Sir Dane Jordan, Eric Roberson. Oh shit, Eric Roberson's on this joint. DJ Rich Medina and others. And there's a link in on my Twitter feed where I talk about, oh, Glenn Lewis laid down some great vocals, and I put the link to this thing up, and it's like $7 on Bandcamp. And if you're an R&B fan, R&B nerd like me, you're definitely gonna enjoy it. He's got some really good tunes. And I think that's it for music. Oh, I'm going to read a couple reviews because I haven't done that in a long time. And we actually have a couple of them. So I'm going to read you some recent reviews. Okay, let's do that. All right. So this one is, oh, come on. I was trying to do these in order. Okay, so this one is from the Grand Shucket. Hashtag black actors. Love this show. Got to support the homie from PG, Chris Lambert. Keep up the great work. There's one from by Noble Vessel. He gives me 5 stars. Can't say I listen every week, but when I do, the pod brings much needed levity. Well, thanks, Noble Vessel. It's okay that you don't listen every week. It's fine. I get it. Thank you for the review. So thanks. And then I got a message on Instagram from LP_EV93. Chris, I've been a fan since the first Fonte episode. I've bought games and put my girlfriend onto the greatness that was Jason Weaver's R&B career because of your podcast. It gets me through my weekend morning since graduating and becoming a part of the working world. I've even gotten more into movies now because of your reviews. Parentheses, the founder is Flames. Got to check it out. I did, and I really enjoyed it. You interview a lot of white people I would never listen to, but somehow it's still dope. Continue to do a great job. Well, thank you, LP_EV93, and I thank them for that. Very kind of you. You can hit me up on social media and let me know how you feel about the show. I've been doing this show going on 4 years, and I've been having fun doing it. I'm going to keep doing it for as long as I can and as long as I feel the need to. And also, I'm going to pat myself on the back and say that I brought J.L. Covan back to you guys. I put him on the podcast. We talked movies, and now he's back doing episodes now. So I revitalized his career, and I'm gonna take credit for that. So let's get to Amanda. Amanda Seals, I met her, I want to say, at the top of 2015. I opened for her show, It's Complicated, her one-woman show. I believe it was It's Complicated was a show that I worked with her on. So we drove out to Long Island and did this show at the Bolton Arts Center. Yes, and we had a great time. And she's really cool just on the ride up there, just really, because I've followed her on social media and was aware of a lot of the cool shit that she had been doing. And so it was good to actually get to meet her. And we had a great time and stuff, talking about music and all this cool stuff. And she moved out to L.A. And we were just kind of kept in contact. And I said, hey, I want to get you on the show. And she obliged to do it. And I was really happy to have her on to get to talk. We were she was under a time crunch. So it wasn't as long. This our conversation wasn't as long as I would have liked it to be. But it was a very good one. And she just kind of put me on game with a lot of like dating and relationship stuff. And it was just good to get a black woman on the show again. It was good to have a sister, you've been on my mind. So it's good to get a black woman on the show. Needed that, definitely needed that energy. And I promise I'm going to get you some more. We're going to make that happen. But right now, this is my conversation with the lovely, talented Amanda Seals. So how long have you been in L.A. since you moved to from New York? Has it been about over a year, 2 years?
Yeah, it's been September 2015. No, August. No, yeah, no, September 2015. Shit, jeez. September 2015, I moved to L.A. And so that's about like a year and change, you know, year and a half.
Have you lived out there before?
I was born here.
Oh, you were born in L.A.?
Yes.
Why did I think
born in L.A.?
Well,
because I've always been a New Yorker. Like, let's be real. You know, even though I was born in L.A. and lived here till I was 8, and then I moved to Orlando, I was always a New Yorker. I have a New York flag.
It seems like you do. I never know how to start these things because there's so many places to go, and especially with you, because you have you're doing a lot of cool things. So I guess maybe what were you like? What was LA like? How different is it from when you were growing up to the way it is now? Were you always into
the
show
business? What's funny is it's actually more interesting how different, I mean, how the same it is.
Okay.
Because my mom always reminds me that when I was in L.A., I was surrounded by, like, black girls and Mexican girls. Like, that was my whole circle. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to Orlando, and it was just, like, two black girls and then just a sea of white girls.
Okay.
And then moving back here, it's the same. It's back to, I have this, I'm surrounded by phenomenal sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's just made me feel a lot more solid in my work to have a solid, like, friend group of people that I can relate to.
Mm-hmm.
And that have similar issues and, you know, struggles in politics, et cetera.
Since you mentioned politics, I think we should talk about this. You're the first black woman that's been on the show this year, and I want to know how you're doing. I want to know how you're doing, Amanda. How are you?
You know, it's like a struggle to just be well in spite of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I mean, I'm trying to fight not being physically my ulcer is exacerbated, like I'm grinding my teeth, like,
mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, I'm not like stressed about work, you know, I mean, I'm under pressure and I have a lot of stuff going on, but you know, I'm flanked by a lot of great people. I don't by any means feel like I'm overwhelmed. But then when we talk about like the politics of it all, I feel very just concerned is such an understatement. I'm just inundated with the possibilities of a future under this empire.
Mm-hmm.
And I know too much to be like, oh, it's going to be okay. I just know too much to know that, to say that. So
yeah,
that's the whole struggle of wokeness, you know?
Yeah.
Very tiring.
It's a thing because I almost feel bad that I'm not like enraged. Like I feel bad. Like they obviously feel bad about what happened, but it's like, yeah, well, you know, we tried to tell y'all there's bad things coming around the corner if you let this happen, and people still let it happen, and it's just like, and now everybody's like going crazy on Facebook and all over social media, and it's just like I don't know, like I still feel like we still have to keep going. I was doing a show last night, and Nori Davis was on the show, and he was talking about, you know Nori, right?
Yeah, Oh, yeah, I know Norm.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, so we were talking, and we were just talking. He was talking about, like, Kendrick Lamar, like, we're going to be all right. And he was like, are we? Really? You know, it was just like, yeah, I don't know.
Well, all right is a very low bar.
That's true.
You know, like, yeah. I mean, crackheads are, yeah, I, you know what I mean? Like, you're not dead. Like, you fuck. Like, you know, when someone asks you how you're doing, and you say, am I, that's not, the, you know, when someone says that to me, that's when I'm like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be all right. It's not we're going to be great. It's not we're going to thrive. It's not we're going to overcome. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, just to get by. You know?
Yeah.
So it's like, pretty low bar. So I just feel like there's, I don't think that his intention was to say, like, just be cool with being all right. But I do feel like, you know, at some point, there does have to be a concerted effort amongst Black people and amongst just, I mean, the folks in opposition of this administration in general that says we really want to stop this sentiment that says only a small number of people get to thrive.
Right.
And the rest of y'all just get to be I. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's how does that affected you as an artist? Like, have you found that you know, seeped into what you're producing? I mean, I just watched season 2 of Get Your Life, and I think it was maybe the game show episode, the game night episode, where, you know, there was, I'm not to spoil it, but there was something that one of the characters mentioned. And, you know, everybody was like, well, we're out here trying to make people laugh. Like, you know, we are doing something. Like, how do you think that, like, kind of pours over into what you're doing? Like, the climate of the country?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like at this point, if it's not pouring over into what you're doing, what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, like, up until this point, I feel like politics for the last, like, you know, 20 years per se has been very muted. You know, like, we've had George, and we've had Obama, and, you know, they were, everyone, you know, all presidents do fuck shit, but nothing has been egregious on basic levels of ethics, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, of course, feeling the presidency was when it comes to George Bush, but in terms of, like, the affecting the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like there's always going to be policies that are happening that affect people. You know, you're just like, wait, I'm not, you know, the regular man doesn't know about that. This is a completely different model, you know, where it's just gunning for the necks of everybody that's in opposition,
mm-hmm.
or that's just not what they think deserves, you know, the American rights. So I say that to say that, like, if it's not affecting your work at this point and you're an artist, that's willful ignorance.
Yeah.
Because whether you're for or against it, it's so fucking in your face that how can you not? Like, how can you still continue to just do jokes about, have you ever boarded a plane? And, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
Even Jerry Seinfeld, who is the king of generic when it comes to, you know, he always talks about, like, he keeps politics out of his comedy. I feel like even he's going to have to just give in. Like,
yeah.
It's just, when you do an entire Holocaust, like, Holocaust anniversary speech and don't mention Jews. Mm-hmm. Like.
Yeah.
It's egregious. So, you know, I feel like there's a mandate for me, for me personally to make sure that I'm using my work to speak about what's going on and to speak against it and to encourage folks to be continuously trying to think of ways to challenge and oppose, you know, in whatever form they can. And, you know, at some point, I think that, well, I'll say this. the one plus of this type of churn is that the art always gets better. When the world gets worse, the art gets better. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Mary J. Blige's life.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, too. I was thinking about, like, how, like, just today, just thinking about stuff and just how it feels like we've been treated like Angela Bassett in Waiting to Exhale. Like, we were there for you, and then this is what you do? Like, this is what you do to us? Like, to the, you know, it's just, I should have left your ass 1,000 times, you know? And it's like, can,
right.
And it's like, I don't want to cry. And I think, you know, I was talking about this with a lot of my guests that I had on last year, just about being an artist in this climate. And even before the election happened, just the way that things have been going on for the past 10 years and, you know, the things that have been happening. Just like, do you feel like it's a burden to add that into your art or to let that feed your art? Or do you just feel it as like a, not like a burden or a cross? Or do you just say it's part of the territory? Like when you want to be socially conscious.
I mean, that's my art.
Conscious. Yeah.
That's okay. Not everybody's art, but that is my art.
Mm-hmm.
My art is socially conscious.
Okay.
So that's just what it is. Like, I don't create art that doesn't in some way service the people. Anything I make, I always, you know, look at those two points of entry. How does it serve me? Mm-hmm. How does it serve the people? And if I can't figure out how it serves the people, you know,
then why do it, basically?
Why am I doing it?
Yeah. So where did that start for you? How was that just instilled into you when you were a kid?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think that's just the person I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, my mom, she's always been very just like against any authoritative forces that are not really about positivity in the people. Mm-hmm. I'm from Grenada. We in general, and like in the Caribbean, like we just fight things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just not here for the bullshit. So it's like they don't in Grenada take any crap. That's why there was an invasion because, you know, we were doing our own thing. Malcolm X's mother is from Grenada.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I come from kind of just this lineage and, if anyone would talk to like my mom and my mom would understand like, oh, so your mom just challenges everything and you kept that going. My mother's water broke and she mopped it up, then went to the hospital. Like that's where I come from.
Wow.
Like,
wow.
So
were you born in Grenada and then you moved to L.A.?
No, I was born here.
Oh, you were born in L.A. Okay, okay.
And then my mother's from Grenada, so mm-hmm. I've always been very connected to the islands, and I make it my point to go on a regular basis to Grenada. And, you know, I've just always been somebody who feels like we should have just let shit be handed to us. You know, you need to question things, you need to challenge things, which drives some people crazy when it comes to me. But I don't just take things as they come if they look sideways.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my work, I definitely use the art to do that and use art as, you know, revolution. Okay, what is happening? I'm sorry. Oh. Somebody decided that in the middle of the day, they would start hammering next door.
People do. Sometimes when I'm home, if I don't have anything going, if it's a holiday or if I'm home from work, you find out that people do a lot of crazy or weird shit when you're not around, or just the type of music. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, So let's talk a little bit about your career. So you started at a young age, and you're somebody that's constantly like evolved and you know, and grown throughout your life, and you're not afraid to try different things. And so did it start for you, like looking at your IMDb page, your IMDb page, you did Cop and a Half. Is that the first gig that you did? Is that the very first thing, or was there more? Were you doing something else before?
I mean, my first real job in the business was dancing at Disney when I was 8.
Dancing at Disney?
Yes.
Okay.
And I danced in the front of the castle at Disney World for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I started doing like commercials and, you know, different stuff in Orlando. And then I booked Cop and a Half. And then I was on My Brother and Me on Nickelodeon. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so, I mean, IMDb-wise, like, that was, like, my first, like, SAG job.
Okay.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Since 1989. But.
Awesome.
Otherwise, no, I mean, you just, that'd be crazy if that was my first job. I was doing little things, and then, like, that just happened, and I never really took any of it like seriously, in the sense that it was just kind of like, oh, this is a thing I do. Whereas like the kids around me and my mom, the kids around me and their mom were like just so extra, you know, and you had the momager shit and everything. And I just was never, my mom was never about that. I was never like talk to get a big head about being involved in any of this stuff. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, that's the thing I do. And but I kept going because I enjoyed doing it.
Okay, so you still got to have like a normal childhood, like your dances and your field trips and all of that stuff?
Well, it's funny you say that, because for Cop and a Half, my mother came and picked me up from our fifth grade field trip early. And it was like our fifth grade trip where we go to like Wakaiba Springs and you spend like 2 nights there and you do hikes and shit. And I remember I was on a hike when my mom was like, let's go. And I'm like, no. And I cried all the way to the audition, went in the audition, came out, and she was like, how was it? And I was like, well, the Fonz was there. And she was like, oh my God, the Fonz was in the audition.
Henry
and
Winkler.
I was like, yeah, whatever. And then I booked it, you know, but in hindsight, it's like, I'm really glad that my mom knew that that was more important than me doing this hike in Wakaiba Springs, Florida with my fifth grade class.
Oh, that's cool. So was it something that you, like you saw someone on TV, like how did it start for you? How did the dancing and all that start? Was it just like, mom, I want to dance? And she's like, okay, you can go dance in front of the castle.
Well, I was always dancing because I was taking dance classes from a young age.
Okay.
And then when we moved to Orlando, she literally just like saw an ad in the paper for the audition.
Okay.
And that was that. And I went and auditioned, and it was like hella kids. And, you know, I don't think either of us thought I would get it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just a thing. And then that was that. Like, the kids in the show, they already had, like, moms and, you know, agents that were really into their lives as professionals and, you know, the headshots and all that stuff. So they kind of just gave my mom a crash course and that, and we just started going and, you know, figured it out as we went along.
What was it like being around those other intense momagers and kids? Like, how did you navigate through all that, from basically being a child performer to a level-headed adult? Like, what were some of the things?
Well, that's what I mean about, like, my mom. And it was never considered, like, my mom never told me to, never allowed me to have a big head about any of this. That's what I was saying. Like, gosh. I've never had a big head about it. I never, it was never treated like you're better than other people because you're doing this. You know, it was just like, this is the thing that I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that by treating it in that way, it just, it was an extracurricular activity.
Sure.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you put your energy into it. You want to do your best, et cetera. But it by no means was presented like, this is going to be your chance at stardom. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, like it was never considered a thing that was defining me.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
And it was always about, you know, my grades. And I mean, to be honest, like, I was always about my own. I've always been about my own shit. So, like, I was the one who was more interested in grades and in making sure that I'm on a path to success. Like, that was always my, you know, and I never really had to have be pushed by anyone to do that.
You were self-motivated.
So, I've always been a very, very self-motivated person, to the chagrin of many, because, you know, people see that you're self-motivated and they misinterpret that as arrogant or as, you know, extra or as, you know, conceited or whatever. And it's really just them not being able to understand what that means. And it makes them question their own bullshit.
Yeah, and speak on that a little bit, because what is that? Because it's one thing to be a woman and have and deal with those things like that, deal with people's perceptions, but then also being a black woman who's very self-motivated and forward-thinking. What's that been like?
Well, it's very single, so that's a very big part of it.
It's single as being like as far as like a significant other or just like
in relationships. Yeah, like you're just You're not gonna find somebody in like it's a lot harder to find somebody when you're all of those things in the climate that we're in. Mm. And I think, you know, then you also are up against the stereotypes that are already in place challenge you. Mm. You know, the whole black woman, angry black woman trope and all this bullshit. And we do that amongst each other as well. You know, that's not even just an outside thing. Like, that's amongst each other. I mean, working with straight black men is, like, always just a minefield for me. Because there's always this level of egotism that specifically comes with the interaction of, like, what gender roles have typically been. And it seems like, you know, within the black community, we seem to have this, like, traditionalist sense that still keeps this idea that says, you know, you need to, that if you're challenging a brother, that you're like emasculating him. And it's not the case, mm-hmm. you know? So you have that whole dynamic that happens as well. And if you're a very self-motivated, strong-minded person who knows your shit, then there's going to be some challenging, right? Because yeah. you're not going to be led,
right.
you know, you're not going to be misled. And there's work that has to be done within specifically the black community in terms of just really moving out of those closed gender role spaces. And it's on both sides, because there's women as well who I feel are continuously, you know, allowing for behavior to happen that just is dated. It's done. Like stop encouraging one. Women to be submissive and just put up with shit just to have a man. Mm-hmm. Stop acting like that's the goal. You know, stop settling for just being the cool girl just so you can feel like you have a dude in your pocket when you really don't. You're not really happy with the situation, but it seems like a lot of women feel like if they don't just go along with shit, then they're not going to get this coveted prize. And it's allowing a lot of behavior to go on that I personally feel is deleterious to the black family and to the growth of, you know, just black men and women coming together. And so we a lot of times get this, like, falsified concept that says, like, well, that's why you need to get a white girl. Or that's why you need to get a white guy. It's like, any of the reasons that you feel like that should happen should be applied to amongst our community as well. Like, so But in being this type of person, you come to understand that, like, people ain't going to like
you. So do, but do you have
the ones who love
you. Go ahead. No, continue what you're going to say. Continue.
Well, people ain't going to like you, but people are also going to love you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's just an extreme, you know, like, and in moving to California, I feel like I've come into a space where I'm not only coming to my own, but coming to a different echelon of people who seem to really understand, like, this type of personality and why it's the kind of personality that creates successful projects.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems interesting because in New York, it seems like people would be, that wouldn't be off-putting to be somebody who's, you know, confident, like to be a woman who's confident in herself and what she's trying to do and things like that, as opposed to LA, where you would think people would be a West Coast vibe, they would be a little more laid back. So
I think that it's flipped, yo. I really feel like the script is flipped. Like, okay. It used to be like, oh, LA is phony, New York is where the real ones are at. Uh-huh. And it's like, nah, we all moved to LA. Because in New York, that's where the phonies are. You know, everybody's got some shit that they doing, you know. But really, like, you're just Instagramming your drinks at an open bar.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what you do. You know, out here, like, you can have tangible proof mm-hmm. of what you do. You know, I started a show. I got it picked up. We're doing a pilot. There's tangible proof there of work, you know.
But don't you
in
think
New
that's...
York, go ahead.
But don't you think that's, like, with social media and Instagram, you know, Instagram is a part of God, Chris, what are you doing? Social media, you can curate your life, and it could look like a certain thing when it's really not. Like, nobody, like, if you look at my Instagram, I'll have, like, oh, my podcast, and I did this show, and it was fun, but nobody sees me when I'm thinking about calling my ex. Like, nobody, I'm not making a selfie when, you know, I'm doing that.
I mean, I do that.
Oh, you do?
So
you put the selfies up,
well,
when you're thinking about
that? Well, yeah, because I feel like if I'm going to do this social media shit, I'm going to be real. You know, like, people saw me go through a whole breakup.
Oh, they did? I guess I wasn't following you back then. Wow.
Yeah.
I missed out.
They saw me go through a whole breakup last year.
But I feel like most of this stuff, I mean, I feel like just watching your show, I've seen season one, but just reacquainting myself with the new season and your character, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like that's a heightened version of you.
Yeah, of course. That's why it's the same name.
And it just seems like you're putting yourself in these situations. Obviously, it's scripted, so I still feel like I'm seeing you on screen, like the real you, but just, you know, obviously it's in a, you know, scripted situation. So,
but you are, though. I mean, you're seeing, for the most part, scripted scenarios about things that have happened in my life.
Okay, yeah. So is dating harder?
Or, like, satirical versions of that, you know?
Because I know we were going back and forth, like, maybe, like, this past fall, talking about exchanging, like war stories with relationships and stuff. And how is dating in LA as opposed to New York?
It is absolute trash.
Oh, like, so LA is more trash than New York?
Yes, anyone will tell you that.
Why?
Because at least in New York, at least it's like, it's still bullshit in New York, but you know what the bullshit is.
Yeah.
Like it's what it is. Whereas here, I feel like, you know, you're dealing with a lot of people that are not sure who they are and are in a business that doesn't require you to know who you are.
Damn, that's...
And you're in a town.
Wait. No. So say that again, Amanda. I need you to say it again so we can make sure everybody heard that. Can you say that again, please?
Being in L.A., you're in a town where a lot of people really don't know who they are and are in a business that doesn't require you to know who you are.
Mm.
And, you know, thus, a lot of folks don't bother to learn who they are.
Mm.
So So when you're trying to date people, you're sifting through so many layers of falsehood and of failure to connect with yourself, that by the time you get to who that real person is, you're like, well, what even is this? Who even are you?
Yeah.
You don't even know. So, you know, and this is a town where a lot of people come to be someone else and to pursue a dream. And so there's an incredible, crazy sense of selfishness that gets distorted as focus and commended as discipline. And what it does is it undermines the power of selflessness.
Wow.
And anybody, in my opinion, who gets in touch with themselves and what this world is about comes to realize that the more you give, the more you see. And it's about figuring out, you know, who to give to and how to give and that exchange. And when you're so focused on just the vacuum of you, you're going to be very limited in what you can really receive. And a lot of folks out here are just very focused on the vacuum of them. So they connect with other people who are also vacuous. And so you just continue, you know, you just kind of get stuck in that. And if you're someone like myself who ain't got no time for that, you just end up single and, have a cat.
That fucking sucks, though. Like, that's something that I struggle with, too, because I think that happens. I mean, that's definitely here on the East Coast, too. Like, I'm going to be 37 this month, and I'm finally becoming a little more comfortable in my own skin, and then I'm learning, I know who I am, and I know what I want, and it's kind of like when you're up front with someone, and it's not like, it's not even being thirsty or anything, like, this is who I am, I like you, I think you're cool, I want to spend time with you, I want to get to know you. And then sometimes it's like, oh, like, what is this guy? Like, there's like, this guy is fucking, like, I guess it's different to some people. And it was just, and it's something, and it sucks that you can't share that part of you with someone when you're trying. And then it's like, well, fuck, I got hurt when I did that. So fuck it. I'll just focus on my career.
Well, I mean, and that's the thing. I think that's also a very, like, common thing that happens between men and women, right? Because I feel like, I mean, without generalizing, there are a lot of men who, they get hurt one time and they're, like, shutting it down. Whereas, for the most part, you know, there's, like, it is over iron curtain, we're done, we're passing executive orders. Whereas for a lot of us women, you know, it's like, oh, well, you know, that was whack. Who's next?
Yeah.
You know? So.
I think both men and women do that. But it's like, I, when you were talking about, like, a person, like, people trying to find themselves, there's one girl that I had dealt with, like, a couple years ago, and we reconnected, like, last month, and we were, like, texting or whatever and trying to, like, see if I could rekindle or whatever. And, like, she said, I was different back then, and this was, and I was like, oh, that explains why X, Y, and Z happen. And
yeah, because you do change and
yeah,
you know, you grow. But I've also come to find out that apologies don't mean change.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a hard lesson to learn. Because you think that because somebody's saying I'm sorry, that they have elevated to understand, like, a higher level of you and them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it either is really just attached to, like, a sentimental moment, like they just miss you. So it's like, damn, what they're really saying I'm sorry about is that you're sorry that you don't get to have access to me anymore.
Yeah.
Whether it's as a friend or not. That's what you're really sorry about.
Right.
But it doesn't always mean, like, you know, I understand where I fucked up, and I understand now how to operate differently in that situation. And this is what this is how I would have handled it differently. So to everybody out there listening, when you get that "Hey, big head" text, you know, just don't get too hyped. You know what I'm saying? Like, because the conversation is more than just, you know, I just want to apologize for how shit went down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, but what went down that was worth that you're apologizing for? And that's listen, that doesn't always go over well either, because then people feel like you're challenging them and blah 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 blah. And it's like,
yeah,
I am challenging you, because you don't get to just saunter back into my life after you broke it to pieces and I had to put it back together.
How do you put it back together? Is it just time?
It's time. It's therapy. It's exercise. Mm-hmm. It's doing things consciously that you have to be strong about, like controlling your thoughts. Mm-hmm. We love to let our thoughts run away with us and just get enveloped in the sadness and the depression, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you have to try to find a way to like challenge that. I put, like, when I'm going through a breakup, I will put, like, affirmations in my phone so that throughout the day, they'll just pop up.
Yeah.
Like, you are the bomb, bitch. Shine on.
like in being Mary Jane?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, but it should work. You know, you need what you need, you know? And it's like whatever it takes. I mean, I'm not somebody who goes to drinking or to drugs. I don't smoke, you know. So my brain is very lucid. Mm-hmm. And that means that all the thoughts get through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah, that's something like I was trying to deal with something. It's just because, like, God, because you made me think about so many things. And I was thinking about, like, you know, because you want the career stuff, and then you want the relationship, and there's got to be some type of happy medium between the two, because you can have these achievements, and then if you don't have anyone to share it with, it feels kind of empty. Like you're like, oh, achieved one of like two goals this year already, and it was just like, oh, this is really cool, this is great. And it's like, oh, well, I don't have anybody to celebrate with. Like, I could go to.
I mean, that's why I have to get a friend corps.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You have to get a core of friends that are like your actual friends, you know, because, and it's like, I'm not saying it's the same as like, you know, having some dope shit happen and you get to come home and cuddle.
Yeah.
But.
Right.
But it's also, there's also an element of growth in realizing that, like, okay, so for instance, like the other day, you know, I was driving and it was like, dude, like you're doing a pilot for Smart Funny and Black. Like you sold Smart Funny and Black. Like this is exciting.
This is your comedy show?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then
congrats.
My next thought was, you know, like, damn, Get Your Life season 2. Like, it had dropped that day. It was like, yeah. And then the next thought was like, damn, I wish I was on my way home to a relationship to celebrate this.
Yeah.
But then it was like, you know, but don't let, like, you can't let that diminish, because there's so much to celebrate in the fact that, like, you did it alone. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's some real shit to celebrate.
I'm laughing to keep from crying, but it's just the way
you did it alone.
You did it alone. Oh my God! Like that, it's so true. But yeah.
So you got to find the silver lining. Like there is a whole lot of celebration that is owed to the fact that you by yourself, amidst loneliness, et cetera, still accomplished some fly ass dope shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like you do yourself an injustice when you diminish that. And so I've been working on that too. And also it's like, we want it all,
mm-hmm.
and you deserve it all.
Right.
But so many people don't have anything.
Very true.
So it's like the perspective has to come into play at a certain point. Like, yeah, nigga, but you got like a lot though. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, you don't have to be content, but you can be appreciative.
Definitely.
Of what you have. You know, and I think some people misnomer that. You know, they think being appreciative means being complacent, and it's not. It's just that you're very appreciative of all that you've accomplished and of all that you have, and you know that there are other things that you want to acquire. But until then, it doesn't have to cancel out the good stuff.
That's true.
And I have a feeling, you know, and I just feel like I'm the kind of person where, you know, I'm a fucking weirdo. I'm not normal. So why would I meet somebody in a normal way?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we're not involved in careers that are practical. So why, how are we going to meet somebody in a practical fashion? You know, it's just not, it doesn't typically make sense that that would be the case. So I'm pretty sure the way it's going to work out is that somebody is going to be, they're already watching me, and then they're going to shoot their shot.
Yeah.
They're already watching, and they know that they can't come sideways, but at some point, they will arrive. They're jumping out of a plane. They've run across a field. They've swam across a river. They're probably on a horse right now. And eventually, they'll pull up and be like, what's good?
Yeah, yeah.
And shoot the shot. That's it. And I will not defend the shot. Please, let it go in. So
let it go on. Yeah, no, it's true. Like my struggle has been for the last couple of years has been to just like, I've been for like so long, like since I moved here, like it took me about a year and a half, 2 years to figure out like having the day job and still being in corporate America to find my footing, like to try to like recapture what I had when I was living in Chicago. And like, I built a community like of really great people and people that inspire me, people that make me, you know, want to do better and just feeling like you're a part of something. And so it took me a while to do that. And then now, like, I feel like some of this stuff is starting to pay off. But the thing is, like, I don't want, like, getting hurt in relationships, like, to make me, like, bitter, like, to make me angry or bitter or...
But that's a choice.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been really trying to work on the whole, like, don't take everything personal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't take anything personal.
Yeah.
And it's hard. I mean, it's really hard work because you're just like, you're doing that and you know that I wouldn't like that and you're still doing that.
What are you doing?
You know, so like you in your mind, you're just like, this person must not care about me because they're doing things to hurt me. Mm-hmm. And the flip of it to help try and save yourself is realizing, like, it ain't even about you. That person doesn't consider this situation, like, a priority for themselves.
Right.
And that's their loss. So keep it moving.
Very true.
You know? Like, it's really about, like, that. And if you say to somebody, you know, these things that you're doing are making it hard for me to consider this a good situation, they either choose to accept that and apply it or not, you know? But it's like, I know that I've done a lot of just harping on, like, woe is me.
Yeah.
How could they behave that way to me? How could they, you know, just discard me like that, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and it's not even like a what's wrong with me kind of thing, but it's just like more like a why don't they see the value? And then at the end of the day, it just becomes like, who the fuck cares? They don't see the value, keep them moving.
But it makes me think of that. Sometimes it makes me think of that common song, The Light, when he says something like they can recognize the shine. He says something like they can recognize the shine, but can't handle the glare. Like it was. It's,
yeah, that's real.
Yeah, like it's just like, yeah, they can. Because there's, I think there's, like women have been like, oh my God, you're such a great guy, but I got this shit going on. So it's like, yeah, I definitely try to not, you know, sometimes those thoughts, you can't help them from passing through, but it's just like, okay, yeah, I gotta get over it.
Well, I'm the queen of, yo, you're dope, mm-hmm. but I gotta get my shit together.
You tell dudes that?
No, I'm the queen of receiving that.
Oh, receiving
that. That is the number one breakup with Amanda. You're so dope. I gotta get my shit together.
Ah.
So it's like, okay, so if I was mediocre, this would work?
Did you say that to them?
Of course.
And what did they say?
Oh, if I was mediocre, would this pop off? If I was mediocre, it would be cool? All right. Fuck out of here. So,
yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, what that really is about is just insecurity and just feeling like, well, if you're dope and I'm not as dope as you, then how would this work?
Yeah.
Get as dope as me.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe, and then at the same time, maybe they're doing you a favor by not.
Every time they're doing you a favor. Yeah. Every single time they're doing you a favor.
Yeah, because I feel like.
But when it's a rainy day and you don't got nobody to cuddle with, you're like, I don't need the favor now.
Yeah, that's, I think
I'm
that's,
light just, on the
that,
favorite
that's just like that human need for that interaction and that connection, the physical, all of that, mental, all of that stuff. Because I know, like, when I'm around like a woman like that I like, or just around that female energy, it makes me better. Like, it makes me, you know, step my game up. So it's like, I know that there's something, because I know what I want. Like, I know that I want to eventually have a family, like have a wife, have a kid, you know. And so it's like, when you meet somebody, like, you're just like, is this the one? Is she the, but you're just out for the first date. Like, you can't, but, and I don't put all that pressure on that first date, but sometimes you think about that. I just think, I guess as I get older, that's something that I think about a lot, instead of just letting it be what it is. And then I really don't give myself that many. I don't put myself out there as much as I should. Like, this past year I did, but like the last few years I haven't, because I've been so like focused on the fucking show business. But speaking of show business, I want to talk, and we got to get out of here, but I want to talk about Get Your Life. Talk a little bit about like how you, about the concept and how it came into fruition, and now like the fact that you're on season 2 of a really cool, funny show. Are you still
there? First, let me just say that the fact that people like season 2 has been blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's good.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's even like, I think the quality has risen. I really appreciated your acting, which was something you don't.
My manager said the same thing, and I was like, was that really acting?
Well, the thing, you know what it is, and it's something that I know, like, and shit, God, I want to kind of would like to get into Insecure too, but I think now you're starting to see women, and black women in particular, to see them be funny and like be a little, fuck, I hate saying awkward, but just being a real person. And
yeah, well, that's the key, just being a multidimensional human.
Yeah,
that isn't a caricature.
And like the vulnerability that you show, like where it's like, oh, like, you know, just like, oh, I was affected by what this person said to me, or, you know, like the audition where you're auditioning with the guy that becomes your. I'm not trying to spoil. I just don't want to spoil.
You can go ahead. I mean, tell it.
Just the guy that becomes your friend. We'll just say that. Like maybe like the second or third.
Yeah,
episode.
That's it. That's safe.
And where you think like, oh. Oh, it's like that. Oh, he's not. And so then you find like what we were just talking about. Oh, it's not even about you. Like it's not even about you at all. Like it's just who that guy is. So
right.
And it's just, and so I don't know. It's really refreshing to see this now. Like because every time it just seems like when we're on film, when we're depicted on film and TV, it's just like I'm serious and I'm acting and I'm. You know, and it's great.
Well, because we're serving a purpose mm-hmm. for somebody else's story.
Yeah.
We're very rarely in our own story. So, like, we're the savior to their story. We're the sidekick to their story. We're the victim.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're the magical Negro to their story. We're the victim to their story. So we got to be really in pocket. You know,
yeah.
But that's why a movie like Moonlight is so intriguing.
Oh, yeah.
Because the characters all have a lot of dimensions to them
mm-hmm.
that are not typically what we see. And that's even harder to do, I feel, in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, how do we make this funny? How do we make this funny?
Yeah.
And a lot of times people just kind of go to one route for funny. Like, it's either going to be silly, you know, or it's going to be loud.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's going to be crazy. And, you know, I'm really trying to do more things with subtlety and with satire and with my brain and creating kind of like funny situations that are pretty, you know, everyday situations that kind of just go left, right? And mm-hmm. they go left because of the way this person operates, which yeah. is very similar to Larry David, you know, like
sure.
these are everyday scenarios that end up taking a turn because of the way this person is in particular. And that's what stories are about character. It's just that we don't see a lot of Black women get the opportunity to have that story told. I mean, being on Insecure, that's what all of our characters are, you know, and next season I'm a main character, so you're going to get to see more of my story, Tiffany Dubois. And, you know, we're going to get to see four Black women on screen who have very unique lives and how those things happen without the heavy lifting of like, no, but you have to be this or else it's throwing off the main point.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that show because I liked that it was just like everybody's got their shit. Like,
yes.
And it's like, and I think when we were texting, like maybe like, I don't know if it was Christmas time or Thanksgiving time, but we were texting and I was just like, yeah, you're the, what is it like? I said, you're the only woman that's got a man on that show. Like,
and that's going to be its own thing too. You
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah. And so it's like, well, what's that like? Well, it can't all be like candy canes and lollipops. So that's cool that we'll get to see.
I mean, I don't even know what, like, we haven't had our meeting with the writers yet, so I don't even know, like, what they're cooking up.
Mm-hmm.
But I know with Get Your Life, it was like, how do I keep the story going but elevate it,
mm-hmm.
but not to a point where it feels like a whole other series?
Yeah.
You know, and, like, how do I, because, like, between the first season of Get Your Life and the second, I had learned so much. I'd lived in L.A., for a year at that time. I'd done a whole season of Insecure.
Yeah.
You know, I shot a pilot for VH1. I mean, I had lived a year of life in L.A., and I learned more in that year than I'd learned in the last 5 years of my life, because I'd been doing the same shit for the last 5 years. So I really hadn't, like, done a lot of, except for, like, the comedy stand-up side of things. You know, I just kind of been very static, and so...
Can you just briefly talk about that? Like, because that's... I know we got to wrap it up, but talk about a little bit about that. It seems like there was a period of stasis, like you were kind of stagnant in those past 5 years or before.
Yeah, like, I mean, 2010, I was, you know, sitting in a restaurant that I could not afford, you know, having dinner with, I don't even know who the person is to this. I don't even remember the person. And I didn't have a job and I didn't have a plan and I didn't have a vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then this guy, Tariq Muhammad Walker, walked over and he was the head of programming at Black Voices. And he was like, hey, my wife says I need to know you. Here's my card. Let's talk about a show.
Mm.
And I created a show called The Spark. And it was basically like a panel show. But then I would have like interstitials with characters. And that was the beginning of me coming to my calling, because mm-hmm. I had been doing music up until that point and just realized that it wasn't where I needed to be. And I remember we had Nick Cannon on, and I've known Nick forever, and he was like, when are you coming back to TV? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, I think you need to do a one-woman show. And I was like, whatever, I need a TV show. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, I was doing a one-woman show.
Yeah.
And that one-woman show was also a part of, like, my figuring shit out. Because I changed my name from Amanda Diva back to Amanda Seals. And, you know, it was the reality show boom. And I couldn't get any work because I wasn't willing to be dumb or extra or hypersexualized.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't willing to fight nobody. And people weren't hiring hosts anymore.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just a really kind of, like, dark ages in terms of creativity. And I kind of had this epiphany that said, well, let me just create my own shit and show people that there's more to me than just reading a prompter. So I did my first one-woman show, Death of the Diva. We were able to raise $10,000 to put that up. And we did that through, you know, Twitter and an Indiegogo. And then I did another one the year later called It's Complicated. And I had this epiphany. I was like, I don't want to do it in the theater. I want to do it in a comedy club so that everybody can come. Because theater just feels like it's not accessible to everybody. Whereas the comedy club, everybody feels like they can come to a comedy club. And I started doing it at the Stand. And during that time, I was on Best Week Ever. We were on VH1, and they started doing monthly shows. And so I started hosting those shows and doing stand-up. And, you know, it just kind of dovetailed from there very organically. And by the time I moved to L.A., it was very clear, like, you need to be creating content, you know, and on another scale. But if I hadn't gone through that stasis, I don't feel like I would really have known how, you know, so clearly when it did hit me in the face, that this is where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
I needed that moment of transition between the music biz that I put so much energy into and coming back to TV and entering the comedy space officially. Because I always felt like, sure, you can be funny, but if you're not doing stand-up, you're not a comedian. Mm. You're just funny.
Yeah.
And it was important to me to be a comedian.
Well, I really appreciate what I appreciate about you just... about what you're doing is just the one thing that I appreciate in acting, and then you being a black woman who's attractive, but you're not, you have this this fearlessness of like making yourself vulnerable, and like with the character on Get Your Life is like where you're not afraid to be like, what was it, season one where you
the pineapple,
like, the pineapple stuff. And it's just like, Jesus Christ, like I've never seen that. And just like it's really cool to see a woman like that who's like, I don't know. That's just something that I'm drawn to as a viewer, where it's like, okay, she's not fucking around. She's exposing her flaws or what she or her insecurities, and it's out there for consumption, and you're not afraid, like with the stuff that you got going on with the social media. I think it's great. I think it's really interesting. So
thank you. I mean, the goal is to always do it though in a way that doesn't make me the butt of the joke. I feel like that's too often what happens when we show women revealing their flaws. It's like they're the butt of a joke, and it's like it doesn't have to be that. You know, you can show your flaws and know your flaws.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be. You know, a lot of times when we see women's flaws being exposed, they are the last one to know that that's their flaw.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And
oh,
so
yeah.
It's almost like an inside joke between the viewer and the rest of their ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, my character, I wanted her to be empowered. And it's like, yeah, you still fuck up and like shit still hits you blindsided and whatnot, but you know, that doesn't mean that you don't have a leg to stand on. And that doesn't mean that you can't deal with things intellectually and, you know, try and fight your way through it. And it still be funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, having your shit together can still be funny. And that's what I'm trying to do with Get Your Life. And essentially all the women characters I create, you can have your shit together and still be funny. Having your shit together doesn't mean you're flawless. Having your shit together means that whatever comes at you, you can figure out how to not let it topple you.
That's true. I think that's a great way to end it. Talk about your other stuff. You got The Greatest Ever on True TV. Is that
Greatest Ever on True TV is coming back for, we're about to start season two tomorrow.
Okay.
Season three tomorrow. I'm shooting the first episode of season three tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have Insecure coming back this summer, so we start shooting in April.
Nice.
And Get Your Life season two is available right now on Blavity.com. So go and check that out and hit me up. And you can also, if you're in Los Angeles, you can check out Smart, Funny, and Black, the live show, every first Tuesday at Nerd Melt Showroom. And keep your fingers crossed, because we are shooting the pilot, and hopefully you'll be able to watch it on TV if you can't make it out to LA.
Awesome. Amanda, stay on the line for 5 seconds. And okay. So thank you so much, Amanda. Really great to have you on. I got to have you back on to talk about music. We got to get into the music section.
Let's do it.
So that's it for the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'll talk to you next time.